No, they're not. No, they were no relation. One of the Weiss spelled our name W-A-G-A-R. They spell theirs W-A-G-E-R. And they made ice cream. Yes, we were. Very, very often we were told we were the same family. But there was no relation at all. No relation at all. Yep.
So why did your family members not want to continue the dairy, or why did it slowly shut down?
None of the grandchildren wanted a part of it. It was petering out a little bit, shall we say. And the grandchildren got jobs in the city, in factories. That's why the small farms around here in the 50s and 60s, especially in the 50s. We sold our cattle in the 56. In 56. And I went to work in the city. But you couldn't get any farm help anymore. That was a possibility because they all got much bigger wages in the city. The farm, the man we had, his name was Joe, but even Seth, who worked for my grandmother and so on, they get their room and board at about $20 a month. And most of them were single men that never married and so on, and they would work on these farms. But after the war, they all would go to the city. The one there, Seth, he didn't. He was a farmer, and he loved the cattle and so on. So he stayed with my grandmother, and he also stayed with us when we took over the farm. Yeah, he was rare, but now the farms were all sold. Yeah, and now they're just controlled by three or four big farms. Harrington Farm works a lot of the land around here. And hard to make a living on a small, you couldn't make a living on a small farm anymore. And now, land is worth a fortune. It's all changed, but I said that 85 acres, good acres, all buildable. That included two houses now. That included the two houses and the barn for $40,000.
Wow.
And they had a struggle to get that. It was on the market for quite a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you remember about the barn, the Wager barn, where the cows were?
What do I remember about it?
Mm-hmm. The spring house, the barn, the double loft. What do you remember?
Yes, the farm, the big barn. It held 30 head of cattle. And, of course, every one of the cows had a name. They were all named. And we would print the names and put it right above each cow. And each cow, they were smart. They, when you let them out in the barnyard or in the pasture, when they came in the barn, they went directly to their own stall. There was very seldom a mix-up. Maybe a couple times if you brought a new cow in or so on. But they would go to their own stall, and they'd have the same spot when you were milking them and so on. You had to know all that. Yes.
And the spring house in the front of the barn?
Huh?
Wrote the spring house on the front of the barn?
The spring house.
The spring house or the...
No, we had hay loft over the barn, and then on the other side we had the horses. There was always four horses there, and there'd be a couple box stalls for calves or a cow that was about to give birth. She would go into the box stall and give birth in there, and then that was the hay loft. Then we had a second barn, which we kept all the young cattle in, the, you know, the 6 months and so on, right on up to till they were 2 years old, and then we would breed them, and they would, after they had their calf, they would come into the milking barn. Yeah. And we had the chicken barn, chicken house. We had a large shed. We had another little barn that where the pigs were. We always had, I said chickens. Well, the names is escaping me now, but it was a type of chicken, and they would roost on the roof of the barn sometimes, and so on. Guinea hens. So, yeah.
Which fields did the cows graze in?
Which fields?
Did the cows graze in?
Yes, there was one right across from the dairy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a big one. Before it was all, that was sort of wet in there. But they grazed there very much. And then many times, after we would mow the alfalfa, the farm grew great alfalfa. It had the right soil for it. And we would get like two cuttings of alfalfa for our hay, and also we would put grass in one of the silos. We had two silos there. One would be filled with grass, one would be filled with corn. And after we got the second cutting of alfalfa and so on, many times we would put up a quick electric fence, one wire electric fence, and the cattle would graze there too. And that would be sort of towards the fall of the year. Yes.
What animals grazed behind the dairy where Spring Landing is now, those houses? Because that was a hill.
That was all corn, alfalfa, and so on. Yeah, that was all. And that, as I said, that ground was just right for alfalfa. But that also was corn. Yeah.
The dump? Do you remember where the dump was?
Oh, sure. Sure, that was right back of the dairy. That was there for years. And it's still there, part of it. And when they were building houses back there, all I could think of was, how are they going to keep the mosquitoes away from all? And that is wet back in there. And they grazed it off. They leveled all the hills off to build Spring Landing. But they pushed all of the land back into the swamp. So the swamp became much smaller than it originally was. Mm-hmm. And a little story about that swamp, too, because there was a hill next to the swamp on the border of the property. And he used to grow huckleberries there. We call them huckleberries. And my grandmother, right up until she was in her 80s, would go over there and pick the blueberries. And my mother and her children would, oh, don't go, you fall. She went anyway. And she picked the blueberries until she was well up into her 80s. And also, in a farm like that, it would, in the early spring, grow great dandelions. And you had to get them early. And my grandmother would go out there and dig in her 80s, dig with her little digger, these dandelions, and come in, and she would pass them out to my mother, to my aunt, and they use them right there, Will and Cy, in the main house.
What did they use the dandelions for?
Pardon?
What did they use the dandelions for?
You cooked them.
Really?
You cook the dandelions.
The leaves, or the stem, or the flowers?
No, you throw the, don't, if they if they grew, had a flower, they were too tough to cook.
Oh.
You had to get them when they were just coming out, before they got their little sprouts out of them or anything. And you would cook them, and we would put vinegar on them when we ate them. My mother had a special recipe, and she would fry a pork chop, depending on how many she was making, maybe one or two pork chops. And all the grease from that pork chop, and so she would chop it all up. And then she'd put the dandelions in there and cook them and so on. And then you put a little vinegar on it. Yeah, I know. That was cheap food. That was cheap food. Just think, back in those days, even the farms, they were thrifty. But you would see, for years, people coming out along the road here, digging dandelions and going back to the city. They knew what they were doing. But it was a free food. Yeah. Just like the elderberries, the elderberry bushes. Well, my mother and father would always make a little wine every fall. And from elderberries, or the blossoms of the elderberry. Everything was used. Everything was used on the land back in those days. Today, forget it. Forget it. You wouldn't even get, excuse me, women to go out in the field and dig dandelions. Because it's a slow job. Yeah.
I assume that you also used the products that you made on the at the dairy. Did you get milk and eggs?
Sure. They asked me about my diet today. I eat butter. I don't eat margarine. I drink light cream. I don't drink skim milk or half and half. I use light cream and cottage cheese. Love it. And ice cream, milk. All the products we have, really, I've lived my life on them, and I'm 90, so it did. There's something right. Yeah.
Who bought your products? Who are your customers?
The regular families in the city. The regular families in the city. Now you go to the supermarket and you get all your milk. But in those days, there was no supermarket. So they depended upon the dairy products, the like Wigger Brothers. Now there is another story. If you get into delivering milk to the folks in the city, we had some folks, we just put it on the front porch. We had other folks where you took the milk in the kitchen, put it in the refrigerator for them. They'd be working, but they trusted us. And that was sort of like with the bread man also. And one of the things that I had to learn were the Jewish families. They were very devout in their holy days where they didn't do anything. And many a morning, I would go in and put the milk in the refrigerator, and they would ask me to put a little coal on the stove, in the stove, or move this or that or something. It was quite an eye-opener for a little country boy to get that education. Yes.
Who were the customers at your ice cream shop?
Everyone. Big families, especially. Especially. And that, how should I say, that was a great learning experience for us. 1939, I was 14 years old. And we had all kinds of customers there. And some of them were very nice. Some of them weren't so very nice. And you had to learn how to handle people. Because of that, I became a salesman. I liked people. I always have. And I could reason with them many times. When we were, they were lined up three and four around there and so on. A man would say, "I was here first. She just came up here." And so I handled them diplomatically, you know. And so, or he would say, "That fellow's giving a bigger ice cream dip than you are. Why aren't yours as big? We want him." This happens. It was realistic. Every day you learned. You learned about people. Some of them were just wonderful. But there were others, and you knew when they came back. Because we would recognize, there'd be three or four of us working in the ice cream bar there. And we would know when they came back that we'd have to be careful with them. It was, we had to learn patience with them. And dipping, Pam measures, weighs her pints and quarts. We didn't. And many a time, I'd be packing a quart of ice cream, and the man who was by, "You're not packing that down far enough. You're not heavy enough on there. Pack it in there good. I want a full quart." Well, sure.
That's why I weigh it, so they know it's filled.
That's, yeah, yeah. And then, oh, many times when they were lined up around there, and you'd get a man or woman come in, and we sold half gallons, of course, but "I want a quart of strawberry, I want a quart of chocolate." And it takes a little while to dip that. And many times when you were dipping, you had to let somebody else get an ice cream cone out of there or so on. But don't you want a nice half gallon? No, don't want a half gallon. I want a quart. And that took time. That took time. But it was an education. I think every one of the fellows there turned out well that worked there. And I think you're going to interview Eugene McLaren, and he and I worked there together. We're almost the same age. I'm just two or three months younger than he. We went to high school together, and I was always the baby of the class. He thought he was, but I was the baby. And I always said that. We had about, went to Troy High, we had about 200, 220 graduation, and I was the baby of the class. Yeah.
Can you tell me about your coworkers at the ice cream shop you mentioned?
Oh, Eugene. Yeah. We had a wonderful time working together. We all knew each other because of the closeness, even though the houses weren't close together, but they all were around the dairy in some way. Mm-hmm. And we a very nice working relationship. We had to work closely together in cleaning up and so on. And many nights, a hot summer night, after we would get finished there at 11 o'clock, as I said, we were paid till 11 o'clock, but many times to fill everything, mm-hmm. we didn't get out of there till 11:30 or so. Didn't get paid for that extra half hour, that quarter, you know, they wouldn't give us 12 cents or so. So, but we would go swimming. Many times over to the creek, over here, the Eagle's Creek, that was where the old swimming hole was, and we'd go up around in there, or we would go up to Devitt's Lake many times. But that they had a boys' club there, and a couple times we got told, "Don't come back." But they were nice about it. They were nice about it. Yeah, but we formed a nice close relationship, and still do. We've all drifted. Well, most of them are dead now. Eugene and I Fred Wager, one of the grandsons, he's dead. And Bub Bisslinger, he's dead. There's only, as I know, it's just Gene and I that are still alive. Yeah, but we made it fun working together, even though we had to work hard, but it taught us a lot of good work ethics. And it taught us how to get along with each other. And we sort of fell in, we each had our own thing to do in cleaning up and so on. And yeah.
Can you describe the look of the ice cream shop? What did it look like?
Like
the decorations, what were the colors in there?
Well, the dairy was all blue and white. And it stuck mostly, the ice cream bar was white with blue lettering on it and so on. It was all blue and white. That was the main color of the, yeah.
And what was this space like? Were there spaces for customers to sit, to eat their ice cream?
No sitting.
No sitting.
They would come up, get their ice cream, and go back to their cars. They would go back to their cars. And I think from what I've heard, many friendships were made there while the families were eating their ice cream with their kids and so on. Yeah.
So 1937, when the farmers brought their milk to the dairy to be pasteurized, did they come in horse and buggy still?
No.
Or did they come in trucks?
No, they came in trucks.
They came in trucks by then.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they all came in trucks.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, you said 37. Going back to 32.
Right, 32.
Yeah. No, they all came in trucks. Small trucks. Most of the farmers would bring in, maybe 4 to 8 cans of milk. That was about the size of the most of the farms around there. There were 4 and 5 cans, which indicated that they would have 20 milking cows or so on. Yeah.
So how did the process work when the farmers brought in their milk and you pasteurized it? Did they come get it and they pay you for that?
No, these were just farmers delivering milk, supplying milk to the dairy.
Oh, I see. Okay.
These were not farmers who had roots in the city. Mm. But the dairy itself, the pasteurization, they pasteurized milk for other dealers. For Oscar Miller down here and Welch and so on. They had retail milk roots in the city. And they would buy the pasteurized milk from the dairy.
Okay.
Yep. And a couple of those had farms, too. They would bring their milk in, too. But most of them did not.
Can you tell me some of your favorite memories from the dairy?
Oh. From the dairy.
Or the ice cream shop.
Yeah. I have so many memories there that it was just a treat to, I got closer to my uncles. Even though there'd be 3 or 4 of us young fellows there, one uncle or one of the owners would be there each night to supervise and so on. And you get to know them and so on. And during the daytime, and then maybe many a night, their wife would be there, my aunt or so on. And she would try and keep the place cleaned up a little bit. And we'd tell stories and so on. And it was a created a close family relationship. We had that with my grandmother. As I said, my grandmother's house, everything centered around it. Her children all built around her. New Year's Day was a huge New Year's dinner and celebration at Grandma's house every year. That I will never forget as long as I live. And that went on until after the war, when the grandsons and granddaughters got married and the family got too big that couldn't do it any longer. But up until that time, and then one of the highlights, my aunt would put everyone's name on a little piece of paper, put it in a hat, and then we'd all draw someone's name out of that hat. And we would buy them a little funny gift, or make up a little funny gift, about something that happened in that person's life during the year. I believe we all had something happen, you know. And we would write a little poem and a little story about that. And then after we had our big dinner, it was always a big turkey dinner, and all there was, well, 30 people there, no problem at all. And it was a sit-down. The children would have their seats, but the adults would all be at the big table there. And after we had the dinner, then usually one of the grandsons, me usually, would pass out, this is to Uncle Si, this is to Aunt Mabel, this is to Aunt Jessie, and so on. And then she would have to open her package and read whatever was written. Yeah. That I'll never forget. Never forget. And then, oh yes, there's a big memory. Big memory. We had out in where the trucks back in and so on was the skim milk vat. And Uncle Freeb, he was a big kid. He was the kid of the four brothers. He was the oldest. He was the stoutest. Unfortunately, he died the youngest. But he was the big kid out of the world. He adopted a crow. He adopted a crow. And it was there in the dairy. And no one else liked the crow. But he was there for quite some time. Then one afternoon, when Uncle Freem got back and unloaded his truck and so on, I forget the crow's name, but the crow was floating in the skim milk tank. Uncle Freem never forgot that, and neither did any of us. But that was a highlight to remember there. Yes, yeah, I'd never forget that. So, yeah, those are a few of the memories. That I had, of course, working in the ice cream bar. There was another great advantage for us younger fellows there, because we'd see all the pretty girls that would come up there. And after we finished the night, did you see Solita? Did you see the blonde over on the corner? Yeah, we saw. Yeah, yeah. Who was she? Well, we'd find out. And she had her eye on so-and-so. She had her eye on Fred. We had many a date result from the pretty girls that came up to the window. And especially when they kept coming back, we knew then that they were interested in one of us guys.
Did you swear a